Iran rejects allegations about smuggling arms to Yemen, saying that they are part of a scenario played out by the Saudi-led coalition. A group of journalists and lawyers sues the CIA and its former director Mike Pompeo, saying that the agency spied on them. And Russia unveils a physical model of its homegrown space station, showing it is serious about leaving the ISS. Thank you for joining us. My name is Kisumi Shahmadi, and these are our top stories this hour. Iran's foreign ministry has rejected reports by some Arab media outlets that Tehran is using its southern port to smuggle weapons to Yemen. Spokesman Nasser Kanani says such claims are unfounded and are based on a scenario that has repeatedly been played out by the Saudi-led coalition and its Western backers. The spokesman said Iran's support for a Yemeni people has always been on a political level. Kanani says such accusations are leveled against Iran to divert public attention from the humanitarian crisis in Yemen. He was reacting to Arab media reports that members of a busted Yemeni smuggling cell have testified to Iran's military support for Yemen's Ansarullah movement. The reports quoted the alleged smugglers as saying that Iran's Bandar Abbas is being used for the shipment of weapons to Yemen. Both Iran and Ansarullah have denied any transfer of military hardware. Moving on, Iran's foreign minister says Tehran will provide the European Union with its final conclusion on the talks aimed at reviving the 2015 nuclear agreement by midnight local time.
I think that by 12 o'clock tonight, we will submit our final conclusion on the remaining issues between us in writing to the European Union coordinator.
Hossein Amir Abdullahian said Iran sees no obstacle to a revived deal if its red lines are respected. The top diplomat added that Washington must show flexibility and a realistic approach if it wants to restore the nuclear accord known as the JCPOA. Amir Abdullahian said it would not be the end of the world if the U.S. fails to do so. He warned that Iran has its own plan B if the JCPOA revival talks fail.
They talk about Plan B. We also have our own Plan B, but we believe that in the end, this matter should be resolved with the realistic approach of all parties through negotiations.
The Iranian foreign minister made the comments a week after the EU put forward what it called a final text on the JCPOA revival following 4 days of indirect talks between the U.S. and Iran in the Austrian capital. The JCPOA was thrown into chaos after the U.S. unilaterally withdrew in 2018 and reimposed sanctions on Iran. Remaining parties to the accord have held several rounds of negotiations to restore the deal since last year. The Israeli regime says one of its soldiers has been killed, most likely by friendly fire, near the city of Turkum in the occupied West Bank. Earlier, Palestinian sources reported that Israeli troops near the city had come under a gun attack. They said the regime forces were fired at from two locations. Israeli media later reported that the troops misidentified the comrades as Palestinian fighters and started shooting at them. The incident is said to have also resulted in a serious injury of other regime troops. Several people have been injured in a shooting in occupied East Irkutsk. The gunman targeted passengers on a bus and nearby cars. Police have not ruled out the possibility of more than one shooter. Meanwhile, Palestinian resistance groups have called the attack a heroic move.
The attack, which occurred just outside one of the gates of the occupied old city of Al-Quds on early Sunday, left at least 9 Israeli settlers injured, 2 of whom are in serious condition. Reports indicate that at least one person ambushed a bus as it arrived at the western wall in the old city. Witnesses say that as people were boarding the bus, they heard gunshots, screams, and warnings that this was an attack. The bus driver has told Israeli media that he tried to pull away, but was unable to do so. Since then, Israeli troops have been raiding homes in a Palestinian neighborhood, and reports have emerged that several suspects were involved and that some were even arrested. Palestinian resistance groups have described the attack as a natural response to the occupying Israeli regime's daily crimes against the Palestinians, calling it a heroic act. The world, however, has remained silent when atrocities against Palestinians occur, which is on a daily basis. The Palestinian Center for Human Rights reports daily killings, detainments, and other Palestinian violations, which is described as a slow death and genocide against Palestinians. But those killings don't even get reported. This attack took place in the occupied Al-Quds, where Israeli troops have been stationed in large numbers. But doesn't the fact that it took place there mean that Israel is failing to prevent these attacks from occurring?
Well, the first thing to understand in the conflicts that we see developing is that the Israelis, of course, are the responsible party for a lot of the antagonism and the aggression and the attacks that are constantly erupting in Al-Quds, in the Palestinian territories, because they are constantly waging a program of genocide and attempting to remove all ethnic natural inhabitants of the lands and replace them with Israeli settlers. So what the Palestinians and other people do in these areas that are being subjected to forced extermination and relocation is the same thing that any free people would do. If anyone, including myself, was forced to leave my home or evicted or lost loved ones and experienced such a horrific a program of expulsion that the Israelis daily practice, of course people would be responding with any kind of militant response that they possibly could.
The shooting comes a week after a ceasefire was agreed between Israel and Palestinian Islamic Jihad in the Gaza Strip. The truce followed 3 days of Israeli airstrikes that killed almost 50 people, including 17 children. The Islamic Jihad was clear about its response, saying the occupying regime kills Palestinians on a daily basis and must pay the price for its crimes.
Last week, Israel carried out its latest round of aggression against the Palestinian people under the pretext that it was thwarting a terror attack by the Palestinian Islamic Jihad. Despite the Israeli atrocity, Palestinians did strike a ceasefire deal with the regime. But the truce is widely believed to be fragile in some sense, as the Palestinians did stop their retaliatory attacks, but Israel has yet to heed their demands. All this, along with the long list of previous Israeli attacks and atrocities against Palestinians, has led to an atmosphere of tension and frustration in the occupied Al-Quds. While the US and Europe condemn the attack, they're encouraging Ukrainians to resist the Russian war, even calling for armed resistance against Russian forces. This shows the double standard approach they have towards Palestinians. But the latest Israeli attack is only one in a long list of the regime's atrocities against the Palestinians on a daily basis. From the destruction of their homes to false imprisonment and the murder of innocent people, including women and children. All this has led to widespread anger among Palestinians whose rights have been violated, leading them to take action themselves. But the question remains, will attacks similar to the bus incident increase since the Israeli violations against Palestinians will continue?
Well, the only way that the crimes against the Palestinians that the Israelis are perpetuating will end, will stop, is when the Israeli government, the Israeli people, rise up and tell their government, we cannot survive the counterattacks any longer. We cannot endure the pain and the suffering that is being inflicted upon us. So we are demanding that the government be overthrown, replaced with new leadership that will honestly and authentically seek out peaceful negotiations of peaceful coexistence that take into account a lot of the crimes and violations of treaties that have occurred in the past, but that are dedicated to moving forward in a positive, mutually agreeable way. So the Israelis and the Israeli people really are the ones that have to suffer and before they recognize that their own government, their own military are perpetuating the suffering of the Israeli people, because the Palestinians are never going to relent. They're never going to stop fighting for their lives, fighting for their children, and fighting for their homes.
A group of journalists and lawyers for WikiLeaks founder Julian Assange have sued the CIA and its former director Mike Pompeo for allegedly spying on them. They say the U.S. Central Intelligence Agency recorded their conversations and copied data from their phones and computers when they visited Assange and Ecuador's embassy in London. The plaintiffs say the alleged spying means Assange's right to a fair trial has now been, quote, tainted, if not destroyed. Assange is awaiting a ruling on his appeal of the British extradition order to the U.S. He is charged with spying by publishing U.S. military and diplomatic files related to the Afghanistan and Iraq wars. Assange's supporters say he is victimized because he exposed the U.S. wrongdoing in the conflicts. Russia has unveiled a physical model of its homegrown space station, showing that it is serious about abandoning the International Space Station. Russia's National Space Agency presented a model dubbed ROS as a military-industrial exhibition outside Moscow. The head of Russia's space agency says that the country will acquit the ISS in 2024 after developing its own station. Moscow says the new space station will be launched in two phases without giving dates. The U.S. space agency NASA says it has not yet received official confirmation of Russia's planned withdrawal from the ISS. It says Russia has declared plans to continue to work with the space station until 2028. Russia's president has underscored the importance of military technical cooperation in the emerging multipower world, and in that spirit, he has expressed Moscow's readiness to sell state-of-the-art weapons to allies globally. Addressing an arms show outside Moscow, Vladimir Putin insisted Russian weaponry is significantly superior to their foreign counterparts. The Kremlin leader said almost all of the Russian weapons have been used more than once in real combat operations. Putin pointed Russia's war in Ukraine, saying that Russian forces and their allies are gradually taking control of the eastern Donbass region. He said Russia has many like-minded allies across the world. Putin stressed that they do not, quote, succumb to the so-called hegemon, and their leaders show a real masculine character and do not capitulate. Economic sanctions banned U.S. investors from purchasing any Russian securities early this summer, but now several major Wall Street banks have begun offering to facilitate trades in Russian debt. Washington had imposed a ban on Russian debt as part of economic sanctions to punish Moscow for attacking Ukraine. Reuters is reporting that investors can now trade Russian debt, which was widely seen as the West as toxic. It says the largest Wall Street firms have cautiously returned to the market for Russian government and corporate bonds. This comes after the Thursday Department said that it is not a violation of U.S. sanctions for individuals to wind down their positions. Separately, European regulators have also eased rules to allow investors to deal with the Russian assets. Some 40 billion Russian sovereign bonds were outstanding before Russia began what it calls a special military operation in Ukraine in February, roughly half of what was held by foreign funds. Kenya's incumbent Deputy President William Ruto has been declared winner of last week's presidential election. Ruto has vowed to dedicate his efforts to improve the conditions of his country.
Today, we're going to form a government together to serve the people of Kenya. So, with those many remarks, let me say to all the people of Kenya, I give you my word that I will work hard to make sure that this nation moves to the next level, is united, and is prosperous. Asante sana.
Ruto has also said that the world would work with all leaders. He narrowly beat his rival, Raila Odinga, taking 50.5% of the ballots cast. Moments before the announcement of the results, scuffles broke out in the Election Commission's tallying center in the capital, Nairobi. Odinga's campaign claims a vote was rigged. Also, four of the seven members of the Electoral Commission refused to endorse the results, saying it was opaque. Brings us to the end of this edition of World News.
You are listening to IRIB English Radio. Good morning.
Good morning.
Hi, good morning.
Good morning.
In the limelight.
The latest Israeli regime deadly bombardments of the Gaza Strip was accompanied by a familiar pattern in the political rhetoric of Western regimes, which have again proclaimed their solidarity with the colonizer. We now present you an article written by Denijel Djedjic, a writer and researcher currently based in Beirut, Lebanon, who holds a PhD in American Studies. The piece is titled, How the Deeply Concerned European Union Facilitates Israeli Violence. As the Israeli regime carried out its latest deadly bombardments of the Gaza Strip, Western officials have reiterated their support for the colony's atrocities against Palestinians. The European Union recycled their usual statements of alleged concern. While claiming to be troubled by the escalation in Gaza, the European Union has ardently defended the Israeli regime and has long promoted Zionist rhetoric through its own political communication. The Israeli regime's most recent bombardment campaign against the besieged Palestinian population in Gaza has caused more deaths and more destruction. Until a ceasefire came into effect on Sunday night, 7th of August, the Israeli regime had assassinated leaders of the Palestinian resistance group, the Palestinian Islamic Jihad movement, and martyred at least 47 Palestinians, among them 16 children. More than 300 Palestinians were injured. No Israeli was killed. Palestinian resistance has reacted by launching rockets in retaliation into the occupied territories. The Gaza Strip has been under a blockade imposed by the Israeli regime for 15 years. Yet, while the nuclear-armed regime uses highly sophisticated weapons to bombard the people of the Gaza Strip in a densely populated de facto open-air prison, in much of Western political discourse, the victims are being blamed for resisting. The latest attack was accompanied by a familiar pattern in the political rhetoric of Western regimes, which have again proclaimed their solidarity with the colonizer. While the United States of America and the United Kingdom openly declared their outright support for their Israeli ally, the European Union has followed a more twisted approach in its political communication strategy. For years, European Union officials have been copying the same keywords and phrases from their colonial archive, rhetorically distorting the situation in Palestine in favor of Zionist myths. While alleging concern over the situation in Palestine, European Union officials have provided euphemisms and justifications for the crimes perpetrated by the Israeli regime. This was exemplified by the message conveyed by the EU's Special Representative for what the EU refers to as the West Asia peace process, Sven Koopmans. Sven Koopmans claimed he was deeply troubled by the deaths and dangerous escalation of violence in and around the Gaza Strip. The evocation of alleged emotions has long been a standard introduction to official EU statements on Palestine. However, this voicing of concern is usually accompanied by a whitewashing of the brutality of Israeli violence and an equation of the unequal power relations between the aggressor and the victim. Thus, Sven Koopmans added that all need to show maximum restraint. Broader conflict, terror and bombs disastrously affect civilians in both Gaza and Israel. The application of the conflict frame helps to present the situation in Palestine as a war between two sides. Who caused the deaths and so-called escalation remains unclear, as the European Union fails to identify the perpetrator of violence. The EU's Special Representative for West Asia Peace Process, Sven Koopmans, further claimed there was clear need for a sustainable situation in Gaza and a perspective for peace. While the European Union has invested considerable rhetoric into the myth of the so-called peace process, the Israeli regime has significantly expanded its colonial violence. Peace in the European Union lexicon implies peace for the settler community and demands that indigenous people living under occupation guarantee the safety of their colonizers. The same rhetoric is apparent in the official statement of the European Union's spokesperson for external affairs, according to which the European Union follows with great concern the latest developments in and around the Gaza Strip, where the ongoing escalation has already led to a number of casualties. is again the abstract escalation rather than the Israeli army that has caused casualties. This passive wording is followed by an equation, as the European Union calls for maximum restraint on all sides in order to avoid a further escalation and further casualties. As the European Union shifts the responsibility to Palestinians, it remains unclear how exactly Palestinian children surviving under a siege and being bombarded should show maximum restraint, as Sven Koopmans and his colleagues demand. The core of the European Union's ideological stance becomes clear in the official statement that claims, "While Israel has the right to protect its civilian population, everything must be done to prevent a broader conflict, which would first and foremost affect the civilian populations on both sides and result in further casualties and more suffering." The colony is regularly awarded a so-called right to exist, protect or defend itself. Palestinians are dehumanized in this discourse and their rights are ignored. The underlying cause of the violence, that is, the illegal occupation and blockade of the Gaza Strip, is not mentioned. Nor is the right of Palestinians to survive and defend themselves from Israeli brutality. Palestinians have the right to resist against the aggression of the occupation regime. Their right to armed struggle is even guaranteed under United Nations resolutions. The European Union discourse, however, is centered around the comfort of the colonizer. How exactly does the European Union imagine to prevent a broader conflict when Palestinians have been victims of an ongoing ethnic cleansing campaign and colonial violence for over seven decades? In fact, the EU-backed Israeli colony can only sustain its existence through a violently imposed apartheid regime and perpetual warfare. European Union officials blame Palestinians and condemn their reactions as terrorism. Dmytro Zantsev, the ambassador of the European Union to the Tel Aviv regime, wrote that the European Union unequivocally condemns the indiscriminate rocket fire by the Palestinian Islamic Jihad group. It is the reactions of Palestinian resistance that cause anxiety for the Israeli regime and thus discomfort for its European backers. It is thus unsurprising that Palestinian reactions to Israeli violence lead the EU to call for a sustainable situation in the Gaza Strip and evoke the myth of the peace process. Calls for ceasefire emerge as reactions to Palestinian responses, while the Israeli siege of the Gaza Strip is easily accepted as status quo. The political communication of the European Union in regard to Palestine bases itself on a recycling of the same old tropes from colonial archives. Through euphemisms and myths, the European Union has conducted propaganda work on behalf of the apartheid regime by rhetorically converting the colonial war against the Palestinians into an alleged diplomatic conflict and at times into a self-defense against terrorism, and by perpetuating to its Western audiences the illusion that there is an imaginary peace process while openly backing Israeli crimes against innocent Palestinians. The deeply concerned bureaucratic elite in Brussels polices the behavior of the victims of a colonial apartheid regime and condemns their acts of resistance, while romanticizing state terrorism into self-defense. Whenever the next Israeli bombs fall onto the Gaza Strip and martyr Palestinians, European Union bureaucrats will already have their communication ready.
Food for thought.
Hello everyone, and let us listen to a wonderful piece of advice from the martyr of Karbala, Imam Hussein, peace be upon him. Beware of things for which you have to apologize. The true believer should not make mistakes in order to apologize. The hypocrite makes mistakes and apologizes every day.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran.
This is A to Z, an introduction into Husseini lifestyle. Today's lesson, Imam al-Hussein's refusal to accept injustice. Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. You're listening to A to Z program from the IRB English Radio. I'm your host, Hussein Hinzano. And in today's lesson, we are talking about the Imam al-Hussein's refusal to accept injustice. Imam al-Hussein, alayhi salam, had a characteristic in his personality, and that was he refused to accept any type of injustice that came from the tyrant rulers of his time. He said no to any bad ruler of his time. He said no to anyone who came and stood against the religion of Islam. And this was almost the same etiquette that he gained from his grandfather, the Prophet Muhammad sallallahu alaihi wasallam, who is reported to have played a very good role and a big role on the life of Imam Hussein alayhi salam. So Imam Hussein never in his life accepted any type of oppression. So Imam Hussein alayhi salam, as we continue, he stood against the type of oppression of his time. He stood against any type of unrealistic rulership that happened during his time. He said no to operation. And by doing this, he used to carefully select each word of the elegy and consider and weigh it properly. Al-Imam Hussein alayhi salam, during the fight of Karbala, he spoke so many speeches. He gave so many speeches, and his speeches were so touching. His speeches were really educative. Anyone who was listening to them, they were so eloquent that the writers of the time, the poets of the time, could really recognize that his speeches were so eloquent, and they portrayed a very good example of a leader, and they really gave a good meaning of who a leader must be and what type of a leader Imam Hussein was. And anyone who listened to them, anyone who reads them, and ponder on them and try to, you know, understand from the type of speeches that Imam Hussein used to give in Karbala, will definitely learn a very good aspect from them.
Why is my heart set on fire when I hear your name?
As-salamu ala alayk ya Aba Abdullah.
Wa Welcome back. You're listening to A to Z program from the IRB English Radio. I'm your host, Hussein Hinzano. And in today's lesson, we are talking about the resistance of Al-Imam Hussein to stand against oppression, to stand against, the bad tyrant rulers of the time. Now, we are saying that Imam Hussein stood against the oppression. In the same way, Sayyid Haider, who reports about Al-Imam Hussein, has drawn a picture of the defeating of oppression by the martyred imam, and he has described the imam saying that he even restrained from smelling degradation and oppression, but he smelled intentionally those swords and spears because in it was the test of magnanimity. You know, it was the test of the magnanimity and the honor and respect. So by the description of these prominent qualities of the imam, Sayyid Haider moves forward and says, then he delineates the magnanimity of the holy imam that was rooted in wisdom and had a specific aim, such that his aim dominated the aims of the opponents, and he did not in the least give way to any laxity, you know, in his regard. He has not described and non-factual matter. Rather, he has presented the facts with a real description without any sort of reservation. So Sayyid Haider, in other beautiful panegyric, has presented the imam's confrontation with injustice and oppression and the courage of the imam in this matter. He said that it may be the most beautiful poem that is lamenting the tragedy of the holy imam, alayhi salam. What he says that the holy imam was forced to accept one of the two options while the battle was shaking his teeth, because the battle was hard on him. The battle was difficult. Imam Hussein faced a very difficult battle, but he was forced to accept. So in that way, he was forced to accept one of the two options while the battle was happening. One, that he should either submit to them, or two, he should be killed. But what did Imam Hussein, submit to them? No, he did not accept surrender. Imam Hussein never surrendered to them. So he said to them, maintain your forbearance, as the soul of man is lofty that imparts it with beauty. Thank you so much for listening. Inshallah, until next episode, fi amanillah, wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. Thank you very much, dear listeners, for listening to this episode of A to Z. Don't forget to visit our website at parstoday.com/EN Call of Islam page, where you can find all our previous programs and many others as well. Until another episode and another lesson, fi amanillah, and God bless you all.
Better friends than you, but anyone stay here won't be alive tomorrow. You can save yourself tonight and go. A deep silence filled the air.
Cultural news, social news, scientific news, artistic news. With the light.
Have you ever heard of fighting nature with nature? Well, that's what the San Francisco metro system in the U.S. did to stop pigeons from overrunning the place. The station has hired a hawk as the new guard to patrol the area. Pac-Man is a 5-year-old Harris's hawk who has taken up the perch at the station. In terms of experience, he is pretty new as he finished training only 9 months ago. The station recently renovated its building, installing netting and spikes to prevent pigeons from nesting. But these bears still seem to find their way to hang around. So, with the Falconer Force, Ricky Ortiz and his hawk were hired this summer to keep the pigeons at bay.
So a typical day is we get here, we make our round, we start off down in the bottom inside the facility, making sure there's no pigeons hanging out in there. And then we work our way up here to the platforms and just check the ledges and the roof and make sure that they're not trying to sneak in on us and keep them out. And he does a pretty good job of that.
The team patrols 3 days a week, and Pac-Man is allowed to swoop in and scare any pigeons sitting around. The Falconer says less than half of the pigeons they left after the first week of Pac-Man flying and establishing the territory. Commuters and station managers say they also noticed the difference. The Falconer says he usually keeps his feathery friend happy on the job by giving him snacks throughout the day. This also encourages the hawk not to feast on the pigeons and local rodents.
Technology helps transform the global food production system and mitigates its impact on the environment. China's autonomous region of Tibet is turning barren land into fertile one using greenhouse technology. Once removed, Beinong County is now the largest off-season vegetable supplier in Tibet. The region has taken advantage of its highland conditions to develop a state-of-the-art agricultural structure. Beinong has now more than 2,200 modern vegetable greenhouses and nearly 12,000 hectares of planting area, some built at unimaginable altitude. But one cannot deny the role of railways and highway transport for making this county a hub for organic vegetables. The income of locals has also been significantly improved, and they are now living a happy and prosperous life. If you're a private collector of wild animals, there is good news for you. A Pakistani zoo is auctioning off a dozen lions due to a lack of money to feed them and a space to house them. Lahore Safari Zoo currently has so many big cats that they have to take turns accessing paddocks. Officials say auctioning them will free up space and also reduce expenses. Zoo is currently housing 29 lions. The lions auctioned this week will be between 2 to 5 years of age. Each big cat is estimated to fetch around 150,000 Pakistan rupees. That's not too much, as some zookeepers claim. Even conservationists have expressed anger over auctioning lions to private collectors instead of transferring them to other zoos. Happy news for zoo goers in Nicaragua. Two adorable baby tapirs are born at a country's national zoo south of Managua, adding attractions to the visitors. Two endangered tapirs, a male and a female, were born hours apart at the weekend. In a video shared by the zoo, one of the newborns is seen suckling and walking near her mother. The director of the zoo says the babies are yet to be named but are in perfect health. Tapirs inhabit jungle and forest regions of South and Central America, with one species inhabiting Southeast Asia. They look something like pigs with trunks, but they are actually related to horses and rhinos. Nicaragua launched a project that seeks to conserve this animal in danger of extinction due to hunting and the destruction of natural habitat. Now we'll take you to mine-riddled French island, Chazoms, which is emerging from the ruins and gradually turning into workers' paradise. Saint-Jean, close to the port city of Saint-Malo, has an amazing landscape but remains uninhabited as it saw a devastating bombardment by the Allies during the World War II. The Nazi-occupied island was victim of the most bombings per square meter. Known as Martyred and Forbidden Island, it was opened only in 2018 after extensive demining efforts allowed the opening of a marked path. Now, every year, thousands of day trippers make the short boat journey, marveling at the spectacular maritime views and flourishing wildlife there. The safe area still makes up just 3% of the island, but it lets visitors wander between rusty cannons and bunkers. Some workers say they hope the trail will be lengthened to allow a complete tour of the island.
Africa is taking back some of its greatest treasures stolen by the British back in the 19th century. The Horniman Museum in London has agreed to return the artifacts to Nigeria. These are 72 relics, which include 12 highly treasured brass plaques known as the Benin Bronzes. The bronzes are a group of several thousand metal plaques and sculptures that decorated the royal palace of the once mighty kingdom of Benin since the 16th century. These artifacts were looted from a region in modern-day Nigeria in a British military incursion. They later ended up in museums in Europe and the U.S. African countries have been fighting to recover works pillaged by explorers and colonizers as Western institutions grapple with the cultural legacy of colonialism.
The Light is a bulletin in which we bring you a lot of interesting news in different fields like animals' life, cultural events, funny trending news, and more from every corner of the world.
The Jamtal Glacier in Austria has been losing around 1 meter of its surface annually. Scientists say the ice is a precious archive that is simply melting away and are surveying the area. Austrian mountain researchers say the glaciers contain an invaluable trove of ancient frozen leaves and twigs and other scientific treasures that can be lost forever. They say the time capsules, including the remote Jamtal Valley, are falling victim to climate change. In the 1990s, tourists found that 5,300-year-old mummy of Iceman near the same area. According to the international data, global warming has raised temperatures in Europe's highest mountains by nearly 2 degrees Celsius in the past 120 years. French rescuers are racing against time to save a beluga whale stranded in Seine River near Paris. The beluga was first spotted stuck between two locks in the river from Paris to the English Channel on Tuesday. Specialists say the animal is undernourished and is refusing food. Warm water is also worsening the health of this creature, which is normally seen near Norway, some 3,000 kilometers to the north. Rescuers say they have only up to 48 hours to save the whale. They are now looking at the possibility of taking the beluga out of the water, treating it, and eventually transferring it out to the sea.
There are many big restaurants with Michelin stars awarded based on their quality. But you will be amazed to know that an eatery located in a tiny village in Greenland also has this badge of honor, making it the world's most remote Michelin-starred restaurant. This eatery in the village, which is home to only 53 people, serves you what it gets from its immediate surroundings. Looking out over the chilly North Atlantic, customers taste a variety of local products, ranging from whale skin to an Arctic bird whose entire wing, including feathers, is on the plate. The restaurant is so remote that you can only reach there by boat through floating icebergs. The head chef says he forages for wild berries, flowers, and herbs, every day since the menu largely includes local flavors.
Visitors and staff at a French zoo have celebrated the first birthday of twin pandas. The young bears were given a tasty treat of frozen cakes and other treats. As part of the event, five lucky visitors were also given the chance to participate in the celebrations behind the scenes with golden tickets. Other festivities included face painting and panda-themed activities. The baby pandas were born last August and now weigh 23 and 28 kilograms. They live with their mother at Zoo Parc de Bouval, where they have been on display since their arrival in 2021.
Many people develop deeper relationships with four-legged animals, treating them like their own kids. A Kenyan conservationist is one of them. 33-year-old Salome Lemasia has been a community ranger in Sierra Conservancy, northern Kenya, since 2015. The mother of four is stationed at a rhino sanctuary and is in charge of protecting a male rhino named Loijipo. At just a few days old, Loijipo was abandoned by his mother, possibly due to her being spooked by something. After being cared for, he was returned to the sanctuary under surveillance in an attempt to rewild him. 3 years on, from his release into Sierra Wilderness, he is taking his time to carve out his territory, of course, with the help of Salome.
What you heard was an IRIB English radio program. Please log on to our website www.parstoday.com/en.
In the limelight.
Former U.S. President Donald Trump is under criminal investigation for potential violations of the Espionage Act and additional statutes relating to obstruction of justice and destroying federal government records. The article you're about to hear has been written by The Guardian journalist Hugo Lowell. The piece is titled Trump under investigation for potential violations of Espionage Act, warrant reveals. Former U.S. President Donald Trump is under criminal investigation for potential violations of the Espionage Act and additional statutes relating to obstruction of justice and destroying federal government records. According to the search warrant executed by FBI agents at the former president's home on Monday, 8th of August. The search warrant, the contents of which were confirmed by The Guardian, shows the FBI was seeking evidence about whether the mishandling of classified documents by Donald Trump, including some marked top secret, amounted to violation of three criminal statutes. Most notably, the search warrant authorized FBI agents to seize materials from Trump's Mar-a-Lago residence to investigate crimes in connection with the Espionage Act, which outlaws the unauthorized retention of national security information that could harm the United States or aid an adversary. The other statutes listed on the warrant include the federal law that makes it a crime to destroy or conceal a document, in order to obstruct a government investigation, and a federal law that prohibits the unlawful removal of government documents more generally. The inclusion of the obstruction statute could be an indication that the Justice Department is investigating Donald Trump not just over the potentially unlawful retention of records, but also whether he attempted to impede a separate or wider criminal inquiry. The disclosures, which came in an attachment to the search warrant, mark a dramatic escalation in the Justice Department's criminal inquiries into Donald Trump. They represent perhaps one of the most treacherous legal and political moments faced to date by the former president. A conviction for violating any of the detailed laws would be severe. The Espionage Act has a maximum penalty of 10 years in federal prison, and the statute for obstruction has a maximum penalty of 20 years, while the statute for destruction of records can also bar anyone convicted from holding future office. The contents of the search warrant became public days after FBI agents seized 11 boxes worth of materials from Donald Trump's Mar-a-Lago resort in Palm Beach, Florida, including records considered so sensitive that they could not be individually listed in the receipt of what was removed. The most sensitive set of documents removed from Trump's post-presidency home in Florida were listed generically as various classified TSSCI, the abbreviation for Top Secret Sensitive Compartmented Information, the warrant shows. FBI agents retrieved a total of 11 sets of classified documents, some of which were marked Top Secret, the Wall Street Journal first reported. Federal agents also took away 4 sets of Top Secret documents, 3 sets of Secret documents, and 3 sets of Confidential documents, the receipt showed. The search warrant receipt did not provide any further detail about the substance of the classified documents. Other materials removed from Mar-a-Lago include binders of photographs, information on the President of France, and a grant of clemency for the Trump political operative Roger Stone. Caught at the center of a rapidly escalating controversy, Donald Trump lashed out at the Justice Department on Friday, 12th of August, saying in a statement that he had declassified all of the records in question. It was all declassified, Trump asserted. The former president's claim was met with immediate skepticism, partly because the seized documents appeared to retain their original classified markings, according to a source familiar with the matter, who spoke on condition of anonymity to discuss an open investigation. Donald Trump has offered no details about how the supposed declassification took place, and a former Trump administration aide, Kash Patel, has said that even though Donald Trump did declassify the records, the White House counsel's office never provided the required paperwork. But whether the former president actually declassified the documents may not ultimately matter. The Espionage Act, for instance, does not distinguish between classified and declassified materials. Unauthorized retention of any document relevant to the statute remains a crime. Documents marked as top secret are also meant only to be viewed in secure rooms known as a Sensitive Compartmented Information Facilities, or SCIF, and their presence in a basement storage area at Mar-a-Lago appears to satisfy the technical elements of a violation of law. In a statement, the House Intelligence Committee Chairman Adam Schiff said the classified documents found at Mar-a-Lago were a potential security issue. Every day that information of such a classification sits in an unsecure location is a risk to our national security, Adam Schiff said. The protection of classified information, and particularly the protection of sources and methods, is an issue of the highest priority for the intelligence community. And as we learn more, we will responsibly discharge our oversight responsibilities, Adam Schiff said. The committee, the California Democrat chairs, oversees